Hello, hello. Welcome to the show. I'm Joy Dooling, and you are listening to the Joy of Membership podcast. This podcast is for membership leaders. So we talk about strategies for attracting, engaging, and retaining members. But that's not entirely the focus of the show, because let's be honest here, there is no shortage of advice out there on best practices in membership. What we need to talk about is how to actually make those things possible in the real world, how to be absolutely sure that growth practices are going to stick, how to make those things easier, more consistent, and even automatic in some cases. Sound good? Then stick around because we're about to jump into it. Hey there, Joy Dooling here, host of the Joy of Membership podcast. Welcome to this week's episode. Are your members quick to join, ready to engage, and eager to renew? If not, let's see what's going on and how to fix that. The best place to start is with the Member Experience Scorecard. With this one simple tool, you'll be able to see exactly where you have gaps that we should fill and strengths that you can build on. The download is free and you'll have insights in less than 10 minutes. You can download your copy right now at joyofmembership.com/scorecard. Okay, if you're driving, maybe not right now, but when you get back to your desk. With no further ado, let's hop into the show. Irene Vanderzand is back with us again on this week's show. You may remember Irene from a conversation that we had here on the podcast back in January. Irene is the executive director and founder of Kid Power, Teen Power, Full Power International, or Kid Power for short. Irene's organization has served over 6 million people of different ages, abilities, cultures, beliefs, and identities through providing safety training and educational resources since 1989. Irene has spent the past 3 decades of her life protecting children, teens, and adults, including those with special needs, from abuse, bullying, assault, exploitation, and other emotional or physical violence by empowering them with knowledge and skills. Now, these are topics that we'd certainly hope that we wouldn't have to deal with in our membership organizations, but setting boundaries and creating safe spaces for our people comes with the job of leadership. Hey, Irene, welcome back to the program. I'm so glad you could join me again.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
So for folks who didn't catch the interview that we did, I don't know, maybe about 4 months ago, why don't you remind everyone who you are and who you help?
So I'm the director and founder of Kid Power, Teen Power, Full Power International, which we just called Kid Power for short. And we teach interpersonal safety skills for preventing and solving problems with people. And these skills can help to prevent harm, such as bullying and abuse and violence. And even more importantly, or as importantly, they help to people to develop safe and strong relationships, both in person and online, that enrich their lives.
When we had that first conversation, we were talking about board development, and you were sharing with us what your organization has done to develop your board. But I was really intrigued by the topic matter that you cover, because I became aware of a couple of situations amongst my clients where they were really challenged by some member-to-member issues that could almost be classified as bullying or harassment. And so I just thought it would be great to have you come back on the program and talk about creating safe spaces and what that means for you being able to really provide an exceptional member experience for people. So can we talk about that a little bit today?
Of course.
Okay. So tell me what you mean by creating a safe space. Let's start there.
Okay, so our vision is that we work together to create cultures of caring, respect, and safety for everyone, everywhere, and in every group, and in every relationship, be it between two people or worldwide. That's the vision. And what we mean by, and the importance of creating a safe space, is so that people can be authentically themselves and yet within boundaries of respectful and positive communication, and that people have the skills to uphold that value. Because a lot of times things that happen that go wrong are unintentional, and then they escalate because neither side has the ability to speak up in a way that makes sense and to persist in speaking up, or they wait too long to get help.
So I have definitely noticed, actually, you don't have to be involved in social media very much to notice that there is this tendency when you're in the online space to be more critical of each other and say things that you might not say if you were face to face. But you pointed out to me before we started recording that these sorts of behaviors towards each other happen both online and offline. So what has your experience been tackling these issues with membership organizations, or how do you help? Where do you start when an organization is seeing this, either at a live event or online?
Well, online things can escalate much more quickly, much more efficiently. One example we like to give is if somebody jokes even to a friend and just says, "If you do that again, I'll kill you." It's a whole other thing if you text it, because it can be shared widely and it's in writing. It becomes more permanent. And so there are some interesting challenges with online, but the principles for real world safety and online safety are basically the same. And whether you're creating safety for a group, you have to have very clearly defined values, ground rules, best practices, and how are we going to communicate, agreements that people make. Being part of a group is a privilege. It is not an automatic right. I love the concept of digital citizenship, just like we have citizenship in a country, to have citizenship online. And being good digital citizens means upholding values of safety and respect while still taking care of yourself. So the first part are ground rules. Within our board meetings, we start with reading how we're going to work together, what we're going to do every single meeting, every single time. When we get people together for a conference, we have different people read our different values of safety, respect, being evolving, willing to listen and learn, and our values of best practices. And I will share with you the links for those, because many people look at our written values and best practices and integrity and communication, and they adapt them. You can't uphold a boundary if you don't even define the boundary.
That makes perfect sense. So let's say an organization notices that they potentially have a problem. They see this dynamic happening and they want to address it. Where do you suggest that they start?
When we have people come to us for training, and whether it's in person or online, they make an agreement about how they're going to uphold our values, that they're going to speak up, and how they're going to speak up if they have a concern. And if anyone has a concern, we've defined a process for who do you go to for help. And that, again, helps in a preemptive way to channel that. However, suppose you're moderating a group and you start to see things getting edgy or negative, and you need to say that's not how we have agreed to do business. This is against our commitment to safety and respect for everybody here. And you might need to take that conversation out of the public conversation and address it directly. When you can give people these skills to direct these things quickly and ask for help or speak up and say, that's not what I want to talk about now, or that is not helpful. If you have a support group, for example, a big bullying case I heard of was somebody in an online mother's support group. And when she asked for help with some struggles she was having with her kids, instead of being told, that sounds hard, and here are some resources and here are some ideas you can try, they're saying, you're an awful mother. You shouldn't be doing things that way. How could you? And that, of course, was defeating the purpose of a support group. So having people be able to say, what is support for me? And this is true. I mean, often when people have suffered a loss, such as a death, having people have the words to say, this is support for me and this is not.
I love that. I love that. That really speaks to me.
Oh, good. And so giving people the tools, because sometimes things that might be upsetting to one person might not be to another, but the rule might be don't give advice unless people ask for it. And then when people say it's enough, you stop.
Yeah. Yeah. So are there particular trouble spots that you see pop up for organizations where maybe leaders need to be mindful of what could potentially happen in those spots so that they can be proactive?
Well, when people feel passionately about an issue, whatever it is, what you should eat or the well-being of the planet, then having a space where different points of view can happen. And giving people the tools, and maybe even very specific examples, I would encourage every organization to look at what has happened and what created conflict and what created understanding. Disagreement is not the same as destructive conflict. We can agree to disagree. We can say, I respectfully disagree, and we can let it go if we need to, because unless you're trying to make an agreement as a group, about what you're going to do together. But if you're just expressing opinions, there's a way to do that. If you need to make agreements together as a group, then you again have your ground rules, but you're probably going to need to have somebody that's moderating. You will need somebody that's facilitating the conversation. And trying as much as you can to do things by voice instead of by text, because there's no tone of voice. I was once furious at a family member who I dearly love because of an email he sent me until he read it to me. And when he read it aloud, the meaning completely changed. Isn't that interesting? Therapists say they're having more business now because of people getting in conflict about things that were texted or emailed because you lack that opportunity for back and forth. So when you can, if you're making decisions, to try to set up a structure where people can have their voices heard and then not be shouted down and have the boundaries be enforced to say, okay, you're going to express your opinion without attacking other people who feel differently. You're going to talk about what you believe, what you think ought to happen, without condemning or attacking somebody's integrity or intelligence. And because if we want people to get along together in a group, we can't treat each other as evil. If somebody is going to need to leave, and there are times when you do have to be willing to say, it doesn't work for you to stay here. And that's very hard, but that's part of keeping your integrity as an organization or a group, is to keep people safe.
Yeah. So it really sounds like a leader has to be mindful of any of those points where members are interacting with each other, because people are people. They're going to have differences of opinion, and knowing how to handle those and knowing how to de-escalate things when they start getting a little heated would be important for sure.
There are people that want to make connections, and sometimes they do that in a way that is uncomfortable or feels like harassment. So having clear ground rules about what you're there for and about appropriate and inappropriate behavior. I once was teaching about boundaries with a dance group. That was not an online group, obviously, but there's a lot of physical contact, and sometimes it's very close. But you can even talk about things like staring and where you're staring. You can talk about how tightly you're holding somebody or how loosely, and being able to have the words to say. At Kid Power, we teach people of all ages those words to say and how to not let the feelings of being worried about embarrassment, inconvenience, or offending somebody stop you. But a lot of times we have what we call the soda bottle effect. You shake a bottle or a can of soda and you shake it and shake it. And when you open it up, it makes a mess. And that happens when pressure builds up inside of you. and you haven't spoken up. And when you do, it causes a bigger problem than if you had done it to begin with.
Oh, I think that is an analogy we can all relate to. We've probably all felt like the soda bottle sometimes, and we've all had someone's soda bottle on us
at one point or another. That's exactly right. Exactly. And we have an article about integrity and communication because I once had a training, and mind you, we do role plays at the beginning of training about speaking up and not talking about somebody behind their back because it's destructive to an organization. And people sign an agreement. We had an evaluation form. People could tell us about problems. A couple of people got mad at one person because he ate all the strawberries. And they wrote in their final evaluation, "We'll never trust him because he ate all the strawberries. He's obviously selfish." And I said, "So what stopped you? First of all, you could have said, 'Excuse me, save some for us.' You could have told us that any day we're running out of strawberries, you know? And if he didn't listen, you could have said, 'So-and-so is not listening.'" That's what the integrity and communication article is. This is a list of all the reasons people give why they don't speak up sooner rather than later. "I thought it wasn't my place. I did speak up, but nobody did anything. I thought you knew." I mean, it goes on and on. And where that goes and how essential it is, if you can tell the person directly, "This isn't working for me," and to find your right words to say. We do workshops on difficult conversations about just this kind of thing, and boundaries, and about emotional safety, because a lot of things people worry about because of past things that trigger them inside, and that's what makes it harder.
Yeah. I can totally see that. And while I smile and I giggle just a little bit over someone being mad about strawberries, I mean, in the moment, if you're standing in line waiting for food and someone takes the last of something when there's a line of people waiting to get more, I could see how, you know, someone might be hangry over that for sure.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I can see that. So if an organization thinks that they might want to delve more deeply into this topic and do some work around it with their membership organization, where do you suggest that they start?
Well, I would like them, encourage them to email us at safety@kidpower.org and tell us what the situation is. And then we can direct them to resources on our website as well as options for training. We do have articles about emotional triggers, difficult conversations, boundary setting, personal practices, teamwork, as well as, of course, personal safety and stopping harassment and abuse and bullying and the skills that go with that. However, usually we do a tailored approach. We don't have a one size fits all for things like this. So I will give you some links to some articles on our website. And as I said, people can take our mission, goals, and values and our best practices and adapt them for their own organizations.
Well, I know that this is a serious issue for membership leaders, and they want to know that members can interact both online and offline in a way that feels safe and supportive. So I'm sure some folks who are listening will be looking for those resources, and we'll be sure to put links in the show notes so that they can connect to those and connect with you.
Well, so, wonderful.
Thank you for sharing your expertise today. Really appreciate it. This is a useful conversation for organizations to have, I believe.
Well, it's great to be with you, Joy. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Of course. Hey there, Joy here, back with a few thoughts about this week's episode. Years ago, when I was relatively new to my career, I had a mentor who was the most amazing listener I've ever encountered. To this day, when I think of what it means to be truly engaged with someone, she is the person who comes to mind. As a social worker, active listening was obviously one of the essential skills that was repeated again and again in our coursework. Still, for me, this mentor and friend was the person who embodied the practice. When I was in conversation with this friend, I always felt her listening. Maybe that sounds weird if you've never experienced such a thing. I always wondered, is it her body language? Is it in the eye contact? Is it just that her face is naturally compassionate? Is it that she gave her full attention without all of the distractions that are so typical in most conversations? I suppose it was a lovely combination of all of these things. Now, this mentor retired from the state agency where I worked nearly 2 decades ago, but she will always hold a special place in my heart, largely because of how she made me feel when she listened. This week's podcast episode with Irene was a reminder that part of creating a safe space for member interaction involves being sure that they can feel like they can share and others are truly listening. Imagine what a powerful thing it would be to create that experience for members. What would it be like if they felt the listening? What if they felt the alignment of others with what they want? What if they felt the compassion for their situation? While no one has ever emanated these qualities better than my dear friend and mentor, I think we could all benefit from infusing our member experiences with a little more listening, a little more alignment, and a little more compassion. That puts a wrap on this week's episode. I'll see you back here, same time, same place next week. And in the meantime, take care. Hey there, you made it all the way to the end. Bravo to you. I'm back in just one last time to remind you that there's a free one-page PDF available over at the website that shows you more than 20 ways that technology could be supporting your efforts to attract, engage, and retain more members. It's actually broken down into the stages of the member journey, so you'll know exactly where each piece fits. And everything that's on that one pager can actually be automatically done for you with software that costs less than $1,000 per year. So if you haven't already grabbed it, you can get your copy at joyofmembership.com/tech. joyofmembership.com/tech. TECH. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time.